to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
There are several things that I hadn't thought of before until Nancy asked me two or three questions. And one threw me completely, which was about how my parents treated me and what impact that may have had on the way I brought up my kids. And that is something I hadn't really thought of. So there was some thought here that I was not anticipating, but I'm glad it happened.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's Monday. Yay! Sally Doyle at Absolute Business Solutions is a trustworthy bookkeeper who loves crunching the numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs. You can sleep soundly knowing that every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You're freed up to do the work you're good at and keep leading. To set up a free consultation, call Sally Doyle, a profit strategist, bookkeeper, and innovative thinker at Absolute Business Solutions. She's today's sponsor. You can reach her at 651-208-8151, or you can scroll down and get her contact information and click directly to her absolute-business-solutions.com website. Woohoo! And you have one last opportunity to join us on May 14th for a We Mentor Mini Lab, where you can develop your intrinsic leadership and mentoring value. And intrinsic, some other words for it are inherent, you're fundamental, you're essential, you're deeply rooted value. We're going to bring that forward and we're going to help you effectively lead yourself. So I'm going to talk about what is innovative leadership and how do I effectively lead myself? What if you could feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively? What if you were a better listener? How would that affect your relationships? How would you incorporate new strategies into your daily and weekly routines and practices that would increase your results and effectiveness as a leader and mentor? What strategies will you implement to effectively lead yourself and become the leader you envision yourself to be? And we're going to talk about how to develop an effective team. So where's my leadership team right now? What level of trust? We're going to figure that out, that you have with the people that you're working with. How do you handle change and growth inherently built into an innovative process? Do you do it by the seat of your pants, through deliberate planning, or some other method? We're going to talk about all three and the benefits of all of them and the consequences of some of them. What if you could implement a flexible structure for your team to be more effective and responsive to change? What would it take to effectively lead your team in the direction you envision? What can you implement for you and your team going forward? So what you'll leave with tomorrow is a mini plan to lead yourself and your team with tools and strategies that you can use to lead and mentor more effectively immediately. It's a working session, so it's going to be at Brookview Golden Valley, beautiful community space, and it's from 3:15 to 8 o'clock. So I hope you can join us. I'll try to fit you in if you really are inspired to be there. I'd love to see you there. So just go to the scroll down and there's some information there. Now on to today's guest. She's a long, long, long time friend. She's a collaborator and past mentoring group participant. Her husband even participated in a peer mentoring group. She's also facilitated a group in the 90s. So Barb Coby, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you.
You're welcome. How are you feeling today?
Good.
Yeah? Tell me more.
Give me some feeling words.
Excited. Mm-hmm. A little anxious. Connected up with my intuition. I feel like I think I know what I'm going to say, but there's another voice that's probably going to come through me that has a lot more to say.
Good.
Trusting the process.
Yeah.
Being here, being present.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm excited and joyful. I feel really grounded tonight, kind of a little rambunctious.
Yeah.
You catching that? Yeah. And you and I, we have a funny relationship because when we get together to play, it's usually some type of exercise that we do.
Some kind of process.
Yeah, some sort of process that we're trying to figure out. All right. And it's usually a healing activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And we're usually circled by your healing dolls.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Barb Coby is a healing artist, visionary designer, teacher, facilitator, mentor, and creativity coach. And you know what else we can add to your title?
What?
Author.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. All right. She has written the book, The Healing Doll Way, a guided process creating art dolls for self-discovery, awareness, and transformation.
Correct.
It's the most artistic book I think I've ever read, and colorful and full of so many pictures.
Right. I haven't counted them even.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Well, and how many, do you know how many dolls you've made?
No.
Okay, it's got to be over 100.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably close to 300.
Yes, okay. Yeah, there
probably are more. I have people come up and show me a doll I made, and I don't even recognize it.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You help others heal with your online classes and in-person workshops. We're just going to jump right into this. How has creating this book changed your life?
It's a validation of a long process, a 20-year process.
Yeah.
Of trusting. If I wrote down the word organic, it's an organic process of trusting whatever shows up next and then playing with that, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And seeing where it takes me.
Yeah.
It's an example of saying yes to a lot of different things.
Mm.
And again, you know, following a thread, a journey. It is filled, my story is filled with mentors. That's why, you know, you're part of one of the mentors, the allies, if you want to call them, that have shown up and said, go this direction. One of my favorites is a woman named Carol Gesme. And I met her at a parenting training. And she found out I was an artist. And she asked me if I would do some art for her for some products that she had created. And I went, oh, no, I'm not an artist. And she said, that's okay. I'll wait till you believe you are.
Oh, my God. Great answer.
Yeah. And so it felt like almost
great
a responsibility.
Question. Right.
You know, that's the kind of mentors.
Yeah, that gate helped you create the space to really walk into it.
Yeah.
Like she, you know, like, oh, my God. Well, she's waiting for
she's
me.
She's waiting for me.
I got to arrive
right,
here.
Yeah.
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 I'm not going to wait around anymore.
And so, you know, the introduction of the book is about all the different mentors. And organically, you know, they would show up just at the right time.
You have a unique experience with dolls because when you were younger, every year your parents would give you a new doll.
Right.
But not the kind of doll that...
That I make? No.
No.
One of your questionnaire was about what was it like growing up in my house?
Yes.
And so I grew up in a household in the 50s. And so the dolls in the 50s, that was right when Barbie came out.
Yeah.
So I had one of the first Barbies, but there were lots of brides. There was all kinds of dolls, from different countries, dolls from different stages of life.
Did you have a Ken doll?
I don't think Ken was there yet. I don't think so. Hmm. No, they were all women.
Okay.
You know, now that I think about it, even the fact that they were from, my parents worked at finding dolls from different countries, and here I am teaching women from all over the world.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that, I just made that connection.
Oh, just as you were thinking about this.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
No, I dressed them, or my grandmother would make clothes for them and I'd play with them. I didn't make dolls. People made dolls for me, but I didn't tend to make dolls then.
Okay. What were some of the words that you, when you reflect on your earliest recollection of your childhood relationship with your parent, what were some examples of words for your mother?
Traditional, and yet she was an immigrant and in some ways untraditional and foreign.
Ah.
You know, when you think of being raised in a household full of 11 children and the parents are from Belgium and they didn't speak English until the kids went to school. So here we're talking about language, right? And so language.
She's pointing to Mike Cabello, from the Republic of Congo. Who speaks French.
Family was huge. So 11 children in the family. There was always family. Talk about family, importance of family. Family, everything was, birthdays were celebrated. All kinds of holidays were celebrated with family.
Were your mother's siblings, your aunts and uncles, were they here? Or were they in Belgium?
They were all here.
They all came here.
Yep. And so most of her siblings had 4 children. And so when we got together for Christmas, it was a pretty large group.
Wow.
Then being raised Catholic, because in Belgium, the Catholic, so being a good girl. So looks were important in the 50s for women, how women looked, and feelings were not allowed in the house. That came from a lot of different cultural things and societal things.
Yeah.
And that she only had an 8th grade education. Because after 8th grade, at that time, you had to pay to go to high school.
Oh.
And so her dad said, I can't afford to raise girls after 8th grade. So he would farm them out to do... take care of children or be a housekeeper or a nanny without their permission.
Oh.
So where they were forced out into the world. But again, it ended up being for my mother nannying someone who was Jewish and rich, and this woman opened up her whole entire world that she wouldn't have gotten. Taught her piano, sent her to opera. I mean, so...
She got like her own class, world-class education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And reading was important to her, but she always felt stupid. Like she couldn't get her high school diploma, and I encouraged her to do it, but she wouldn't do it.
Well, do you think that was part of your desire to, because you had gotten your undergraduate degree later in life?
It was important to me. I think that comes from, well, in the 50s, girls only were given 3 options. As far as careers, and I was raised in a house full with 3 boys. So the feminist in me never thought it was fair that I had to do certain things and the boys didn't have to. And so there was kind of this rebellion of, I don't know where that rebellion comes from, but it just, something just drove me into, oh yeah, I can't do that, watch me.
I see.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, do you want to talk about my dad?
Yeah.
So dad was an accountant.
Okay.
He was extremely hard worker. He was raised in poverty. He was a wounded World War II vet.
Mm.
And he always had 2 or more jobs.
Wow.
So I learned about hard work from him. He was a creative at the same time. He did woodworking and he worked on his cars and he... made things out of wood. If something got broken, he'd find a way to fix it.
Hmm.
But he wasn't available for connection. He never connected with his sons when they were little. It was my mom that was taking them to baseball games and activities. He was always working to support the family. 50s again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, he was this this teacher and this person interested in travel and an ongoing need to learn and to share what he learned. And so, you know, the words, you know, the working hard came from him, probably leaning into, for me, you know, working so hard that I don't connect with other people, that I can get lost in working too hard and therefore not take care of myself. Okay. So he did that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he modeled, you know, this very smart person that...
Sounds like you admired him.
I did. He tried to teach me how to do accounting. Like, here, go find the missing penny. And I would go, no, I don't want to. No, I never was comfortable with being so creative and right-brained. So my left side with money and numbers, it wasn't my strength.
Mm-hmm.
But having many skills, which I could say that I probably
yes,
got
you do.
From both parents, because okay. my mother knit and sewed and all the other things that she did.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a good exercise because it allows me to see, well, this caused some issues, but it was they were all growing experiences.
Okay.
You know, so you can see the benefit.
Oh, okay. I worked hard to come up with an exercise that we haven't done yet or conversation we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
So good.
It was thought-provoking.
Okay.
I mean, I felt closest to my dad.
Okay.
I think there was, I don't know if I have really words for that. At one point, the family was separated from him. He worked in Washington, D.C. to make money for the family, and we were separated, and it was hard times for the family.
How long?
A year, and my mother would tell me that I would just be so depressed when he was gone. So I was firstborn daughter, you know, connected to the dad.
Yeah, right.
The princess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So once you started getting these dolls as gifts,
mm-hmm.
how did that start formulating into your creativity and how did your creativity kind of take shape?
Well, my mother would make sure that there were art supplies in the house.
Oh.
So there were coloring books that mm-hmm. were coloring books about dolls.
Did she teach you to sew?
She tried to, but she did teach me to knit.
Okay. Where did you learn the sewing?
I taught myself.
Okay.
I taught myself after I got married because I'm tall, and so there were no tall girl clothes in the 50s, and so I knew what it felt like not to have clothes that didn't fit.
Oh, so you...
Oh, there's something in there, isn't there?
Well, yeah, so you made your own clothes
yeah.
out of necessity.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm surprised your mom didn't. Because didn't she sew?
She knew how to sew a little bit, but she didn't make clothes for herself.
Okay. For some reason, I was thinking that.
There was a sewing machine. She would, you know, mend clothes.
Yeah, mend clothes. Okay. Wow. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool. I didn't really finish your bio since 1989, your work has focused on the subjects of emotional expression.
Right.
So in a household in the 50s where emotions were not allowed,
right,
you're a very emotionally connected person.
Yep.
And very expressive with your emotions.
Right. No, at one point they said they didn't know what was wrong with me. We don't know how to help you. Because I would just cry, you know, when I felt too much.
I see.
And so the invitation was, you know, go to your room or... I don't stop. Don't be scared. Don't be sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just don't feel.
Right.
I see. And so did part of that you shut off then?
Well, I'm sure.
Okay. And then, so how did you carve your way out of the household and into the world? Was this in Minnesota?
This was in Iowa. So it's Davenport,
Iowa. Okay. Farm country too.
Farm country too. So I when I look back and I think, where did art touch me growing up as a child? And it wasn't the art experiences in school. I can still remember the fifth grade art teacher and one of the making a doll out of a bottle. I remember that.
Oh, okay.
So the art teachers ended up, now as I think about it, more mentors.
Okay.
And then whenever, any way that I could get involved with doing some kind of art, whether it was art that was for plays or art that was for some kind of shows, you know, I would get involved doing that. Hmm. And then when I decided to go to college, this was another 50s thing. My dad said he would only pay for my first year of college.
Okay. So a little bit more progressive than the eighth grade education.
Right.
Right. So you finished high school.
Right. Finished high school.
Okay. And then?
University of Iowa, focusing on art, and got A's in art and didn't do well in much of anything else. So I decided I wasn't going to continue.
Okay.
And I know that if I had gone into, you know, really, I wasn't that conscious. I can look back and say, you know, really wasn't conscious of who I was. It's so typical of that age too. But So I started working for a company called, well, it's the Army, U.S. Army, Rock Island Arsenal. And I just got a job as an administrative assistant. And this program came up and said they were training people to be engineering draftsmen. And I went, I'll try that.
Yeah.
And so I...
You're got, raising your hand.
Yeah. I know. I was like, how do I be so auditory? And so I got trained to be an engineering draftsman, and I did that for a while. I was one of two women in the department that
learned that skill.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So you were gravitating toward art.
Right.
In a way that you could make a living.
Yeah.
Yeah. And part of the reason I wanted you here to have this conversation, mm-hmm. well, one, I just think you're one of the most creative people I've ever met.
Oh, thank you.
And you've stayed on your journey
uh-huh.
the entire time I've known you since the 90s.
Right.
And you started your business in 1989?
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the years that you're talking about right now were what? Was that in the
early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, yeah.
Okay. All right. And I'm just thinking of women business owners, too, did not have much support.
You wouldn't hear about what a woman running a business. I think about it, I don't think I ever heard of anybody doing that.
And none of your aunts or uncles?
There was my mom's last sister was in the Air Force.
Okay.
But that was it. The rest of them were all wives.
Homemakers. Wow.
Oh, no. You know, one of her brothers married a woman and they never had children. And she worked.
Okay.
And she, by the family, it's funny now I think about it, all the women kind of called her bad.
Bad?
Well, that... They always found ways to gossip about her and how she wasn't a real woman and she didn't have children. And
oh, I see.
Kind of a spinster type.
Okay.
So it was a strange tribe. It was a tribal thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. The fact that you've written a book too, you know, I think is so amazing. So
how do you start from 1989? How do I start? 1989.
Well, so you got married, at some point you got married. In the 70s, and you have two kids.
Mm-hmm.
What was Bill doing at the time that you met him?
Well, I met him in Germany, and he was in the Army.
And what were you doing in Germany?
Working as a civilian in the Army. So my father got an opportunity to go and travel. And live and work at this army base in Germany. And so I went the last 18 months he was there.
Wow, I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And I was the secretary for the inspector general. Again, surrounded by all these men, you know, like being raised with three boys.
Yeah.
Well, now you put a single woman on an army base with all those men.
Yeah.
Talk about rebellion and feminism and, you know, traditional expectations of how a woman should behave. And
yeah. Well, I'm surprised you had a secretarial job with your creativity.
It was the only thing they had.
That was available. Yeah.
So and I got to travel all over Europe. And
oh.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But there was a GI that I had my own apartment in Germany, who lived next door, and he was an artist. He was a graphic artist. And I found this part of myself that I started drawing and painting with his encouragement, and then decided I was going to go to Ringling School of Art in Florida. And so left Germany, but I had met Bill, and so I spent about 6 months there.
In Germany or?
In Florida.
In Florida to get more schooling in graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how you developed your graphic design background.
Right. And then he went, and he had just 6 months left to get his art teacher's certification.
Okay.
Degree. And so I married an artist.
Okay.
Who was more confident about his art than I was about mine.
And how did that take shape in your marriage?
We just had this conversation that that I was very confident about who I was in Germany. I was confident about a lot of different things. And as soon as I got the label wife, I went into the 50s mode.
Okay.
Of being that traditional
caretaker and household.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, I had jobs where I learned how to become, I took my on-the-board drafting skills and turned that into a job as a graphic designer. And that got training on the job as a big, and so that transferred over. And so I made money again as an artist.
Sure. And how did you end up in Minnesota?
So Bill's from Minnesota. And so we got married in New Orleans and moved to Minnesota.
Okay. And then you started your life.
And then started our life, yeah.
I see. So as we're finishing out our conversation for this first episode, I was wondering if there's some pieces that we can give the audience that would give them an exercise to do for this week.
I know. I love putting you on the spot.
Okay. Well, can I take one from your book?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So I'm good at shocking. So I didn't totally prepare Barb for this part because I just realized that I hadn't put any questions in there. But one of the things in how you put your book together and part of the work that you do is focusing on archetypes.
Right.
You have 5 healing dolls in your book that make up the healing doll process that you're writing about.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like the guardian, the scapegoat, the loving kindness, the talisman, and the inner healer. And these archetypes are characters, images, and themes that embody a universal, has a universal meaning and basic human experience.
Right.
So they keep the same characteristics regardless of the plot or the time period.
Right.
If we had the audience focus on one of the archetypes within themselves for this week, which one would be a good one to start?
Well, what's coming to mind right away is loving kindness.
Okay. That's funny because I was thinking of the same thing. Okay. So loving kindness.
Yeah.
So how would they find the archetype within themselves of loving kindness?
If I were to turn it into an art activity?
Yeah.
I would draw a circle.
Okay.
And in the circle, I might even... In the circle would be a circle in the center that would hold an image of a heart. And then words around that heart of ways that you can love yourself this week.
Ways that you could love yourself this week.
And maybe to deepen it is to notice for the week how other people love and take care of themselves.
Oh.
So it's finding mentors, in a way, or mirrors. The reason loving kindness wasn't always there, is that originally there was the guardian and then the scapegoat, which is what's in the way of what you want, and then we moved right to the talisman that's about what you do want. But after people do deep work, they're exhausted.
Yeah,
they open themselves up. And they might have all this growth experience.
It's kind of like crying.
Yeah.
You know, it feels so good to just cry when you've been holding something really, really tight emotionally.
Yeah.
And then after you're done, you're like, after releasing all of that, you're totally wiped out.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it didn't seem the right timing to jump into, okay, well, we fixed that. Let's move on to what we want next.
You know? Right.
That there needed to be some time to... spend within to nurture yourself and nurture the process and be grateful and, you know, all those spiritual qualities.
Yeah, so build your energy back up.
Yeah.
But do it in a way that's kind to yourself.
The image came to me from Facebook where, you know, they showed an image of how we plug in our phone.
Yeah.
In order to build up the battery.
Right.
This is a way, how do you plug in to yourself and build up your battery?
Okay. That's a great image for the focus of this week.
Yeah.
Right? To plug in your loving kindness battery.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll put that in the show notes. I think that's a really wonderful thing to do. And I wanted to give the audience kind of an example of how you work.
Yeah.
Because it's so, you know.
Intuitive. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's inspiring. And we always have fun.
Well, and it's interesting because I met Matthew Fox. He wrote Original Blessing this year at a conference about on saging or for older adults. And he said that we forget about, and this is a risky thing to say in a general crowd, but we forget about the divine feminine, which is the nurturing, taking care of yourself, comforting part of ourselves that isn't about doing, doing, doing. It's about being.
Yeah. So how do you do that as a business owner?
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy because the whole story is about, you know, growing up in this, the way my dad was, and they were both hard workers, and is that where do you take time? And I found a formula recently, like you give yourself 45 minutes to work, and then you take a 15-minute break.
Yeah.
And my old way of doing it is work, 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 work until you're...
You can't work anymore.
Right.
Yeah. That's how we used to work on the farm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and here my mom's whole side of the family were farmers.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. So it's part of the DNA. So it's a new practice, you know, set the timer for 45 minutes. And
then you just take a break. Yeah, what I've been doing is it hasn't been really about the time. It's been more about like the project. Like I can work on one piece of, you know, if it's a big project, that I'll work on it. And then I deliberately take some sort of a break to kind of honor the work that I just did.
Yeah.
Whether it's meditating or going to yoga or just doing walking around my office space, my home office space, getting a change of mind and then moving on to the next project or making a phone call or, you know, something. But good. All right. It's all about loving kindness and working it into your day. And what we were talking about when you're doing and you're in touch with this archetypal the different archetypes within ourselves, that when you tap into that, when you're working through some deep emotion, to give yourself some loving kindness when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, great. This is like a psychological hug. All right. Well, we've got our homework assignment.
Mm-hmm.
We've started the first of two conversations. I wanted to thank you so much for sharing so openly about the words for your mother and your father and how that shaped the environment that you were in.
Yeah.
That you took it to a level where you really, really got something out of it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer,
mon frère.
We'll see everybody next week.